Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm and author of Investing Simplified, the book. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America, with a financial advisor, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and is broadcast live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck with a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com. Or you can call him right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. Or for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
Well, welcome to this live presentation of Investing Simplified. This is your opportunity to pick up the phone, give us a call, ask us that question that's been keeping you up at night. And believe it or not, we've got the house full today. In studio with me is Kevin Stege with the Baker Colson CPA firm.
Hello, Chuck.
And we have on the line Carl Jepson with the Carl Jepson Attorney at Law. Carl, are you there?
I am here. I want to quell the rumors that, something is wrong. I'm just here, that's all.
Okay, well, listen, that's great. We're all three in the house today. So, listeners, if you've been waiting to ask something, hopefully you've been taking your notes, writing down questions, pick up the phone, give us a call, 503-417-9595, toll free 877-733-1011. Now, here's the listeners' choices. They can hear us jibber-jabber and talk about stuff, or they can call in and ask us a question about something that they're concerned about. So that's a pretty fair deal, I think. Well, Carl, we're going to let you kick it off.
Oh, wow. Well, that's good. Okay. Well, it's been a little while. So, actually, I wanted to kind of refresh some thoughts on living trusts, because that's a subject that comes up a lot. And so I wanted to just tell you that in my big practice, I usually tell people that there are essentially three big reasons why one wants to consider a living trust, and a living trust is essentially a substitute for a will. So number one, to avoid probate. That's clearly the big reason why people use a living trust. Some people say, well, so what's probate? And that's an interesting question, actually. But probate is a formal court proceeding, which essentially requires that all the bills be paid when somebody dies, and that their property gets gathered together, and that it gets distributed to whoever is supposed to go to, if they have a will, or if there is no will, to those people who would get the property under law. And that's called intestate succession. So it's a formal proceeding, so the court oversees this, and the court has staff that do auditing, and the judge has to sign orders and things like that. And it takes a minimum of 4 months, because there is a four-month statutory waiting period to allow creditors to make a claim if there are any claims against the estate. So that's one of the things that takes a while to work with. 4 months is a real short period. It sounds like a long time, but it goes by very quickly. And a lot of times it goes much longer than that, depending on the nature of the probate and who's doing what and all those kinds of things. Unforeseen circumstances can make them run as long as a year or more pretty easily. So the four-month period can be a detraction, and the living trust, allows you to move much more quickly than that. generally. That may not be the case if you have a fight, but hopefully you won't. So the probate process involves a lot of paperwork, and it involves a lot of running around for the personal representative, and it's all overseen by the court. So there are a number of reasons why people want to avoid probate, and not that the living trust avoids doing something, because the trustee in this case would be the same person as the personal representative or the executor, and the trustee of the living trust manages it by themselves, basically, on their own time frame, and for the most part, they get to do it in the manner that they want to do it. There are certainly legal rules that follow, but nonetheless, the trustee has a much greater flexibility in terms of working through the distribution process. So that's Carl? Number one, avoid probate.
Yep. Hey, Carl, we got a caller on the line who's got a question. And So it's Greg's got a question about a Roth conversion. Are you there?
I am.
Okay, and your question?
Well, my question is, I want to convert from my traditional IRA to a Roth, and I want to take out $20,000. And under the Oregon taxes, that's 22%. I'll stay in my 22% bracket, plus 9% Oregon makes 31% that I'm going to be paying on that. Is that correct?
Well, first, how old are you?
I'm 60.
Okay, so you're over 59 and a half.
Yes.
So we have our CPA right here with the tax answers.
Yes, 31% sounds spot on.
Well, my question then is, to follow up on that, is it going to be exactly 31%, or when we do our taxes at the end of the year, when I file my taxes, am I not under all the different tax rates as they come through, like so much that I make at the 10% rates tax, and then whatever I make at the next rates tax?
Right.
Or is everything taxed at my Oregon, and Fed rate?
It is progressive, so your first dollars will get taxed at the lower rates, and as you move up. But if you are already in the 22% bracket, then stacking $20,000 into the 22% bracket, that would get taxed. You're marginally, they'll get taxed at 22%, 9% Oregon. Effectively, your full tax liability, once you factor in all the other brackets, will be less than 22%.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe
that's
like
great
news.
Yep.
18
yep.
or 17. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And we're going to get right back to Carl's comments.
I appreciate that very much, and it's always good to know and nice to hear you, Kevin, on the radio. And as always, it's helpful. In fact, I have a question for you here a little while later. But in terms of avoiding probate, I wanted to add one new thing that is maybe a very important thing why people would want to try to avoid probate. And this is not a relatively recent development, has kind of been developing over time, and that is that the court system is really becoming overwhelmed with the numbers of probates, and the probate court also handles guardianships and conservatorships. So no one has seen fit to give the courts additional staffing, and I have to give kudos to the staff that I work with and the judges that I work with in Multnomah County and in Clackamas County, because they are working really, really hard, and they're doing a great job keeping up. But even now, especially in Multnomah County, which has the largest volume of probates in the state, they tell us that the minimum time for getting an order signed by the court is 3 weeks. That is, in other words, you're all done, and you send in your order to get something fixed under the probate process, and it's going to take at least 3 weeks before the judge will sign it. Not because they don't want to, just because they can't get to it. So, and I think that time frame is going to be extending longer and longer. So that adds to that 4 months and all that other stuff. So it takes, all of that stuff takes time, and the staff that works with the judge, they have the same problem, and they're called upon to do actual audits, and I mean detailed audits of the probates, in most cases, and that takes them a long time. It just takes a lot of effort, and they don't have anybody else to give it to. So you have to be patient, but they've been wonderful in terms of trying to make it all work. So, but I think in times ahead, it's going to take longer. So kudos to the court people, and for those of us who work with them, you know, have patience. So anyway, number two, though, so avoiding probate's one, provide lifetime management for assets if you're incapacitated. That's number two. And generally speaking, I think that living trust actually works a little better than the power of attorney. It usually works in conjunction with the power of attorney, because a power of attorney will work with things outside the trust, but not as well with the things in the trust. So together they work very well to manage your assets during incapacity and have a person that you selected doing that. So then finally, the third big reason is to distribute the assets according to your wishes when you die. And what I mean by that is sometimes people want to delay the distribution of assets over a period of time because perhaps they have a financially challenged a beneficiary or something like that. Sometimes they want to have a way to maintain the beach house or the family cabin or whatever it is within the family, and they can do this through a trust or some other means too. And there is one final thing that the trust can do that is more important than probably all the rest of those things, and that is to make sure that the lawyer gets the 1967 Shelby Cobra.
Ah, yes.
We knew that was coming. Carl,
you know, I hadn't forgotten the Cobra yet, you know. Yeah. So.
Carl, one of the things that we see in our practice, and I know you and I have had similar situations to this, where the clients have that beach house you're talking about,
yep.
And there's four kids, and then there's grandkids, and then somewhere down the road, everybody kind of quits using the beach house.
Yep.
And then you got a dilemma, because some of the family wants to sell it and some of the family doesn't want to sell it.
Well, we sometimes call that the stuff of which lawsuits are made. unfortunately, that's one of those issues that often comes up, and there are several different kind of ways of doing it. One is to maintain the thing in a trust, and the trustee has a discretionary requirement to preserve the trust in the family. That can be really hard, though, because if three out of the four kids desperately need the money, or something, it really becomes difficult. It makes it very difficult to balance the interests of keeping it in the family versus the legitimate interests of those who don't want to be part of that. And so even though, mom and dad probably, or grandma and grandpa say that they really, they want to preserve it for the family, but maybe the family outgrows the beach house sometime. There is actually a wonderful rule called the Rule Against Perpetuities, which came up in feudal England, which basically says you can't hold on to property in a family name forever. And so there are limitations on how long you can keep it in the family under law anyway. So you can't keep it forever, but you can, keep it certainly for people who are alive when you make that decision. It's a challenging thing, but to answer the question, if it gets really bad, it ends up in a lawsuit that sometimes is called a partition suit, which essentially forces a sale or forces a distribution or a buyout or something, just depending on what the facts are. So, but it's not an easy process, and that's an expensive process and doesn't do much to contribute to family harmony.
This is one of the things that I think that a lot of people miss out on. It's called communication.
Yes.
And I think it's one thing really important if you're planning your estate that you communicate to your heirs not only your wishes, but what their plans are down the road, because you may have that beach cabin or that cabin in the mountains, and you may think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, but they may not.
Well, that's exactly it. And the other thing, too, is that generally... and here's where this comes up as another kind of fight. The person who gets a third or a fourth or a seventh or whatever it is of the property or an interest in the property, well, they're then obligated for 1/7 of the ownership of it and also 1/7 of the upkeep. And so then you have, several siblings paying the bill, and one isn't because they can't, and then the next thing you know, they're having a fight over, not paying the bill. Then there's also another fight that can come up, which is, you know, who gets to use the place and when, and under what circumstances, and who can they loan it out to? I mean, there are lots of things that happen. These can be dealt with in various provisions, either under the trust or under a limited liability company, or what, or it could be done under what we would call a co-tenancy agreement. And I've done a number of those things. And so far, I haven't heard of anybody filing a lawsuit. But I think partly because the family members have been basically good at working it out amongst themselves. And hopefully that's the case.
We've got another caller on the line, and so we're gonna take a quick break and come back with that caller, and we're going to also come back with the tax investigator. Carl, you're going to hang on the line, right, for calls?
You bet, I will.
And we'll be right back with Investing Simplified with the tax investigator, and Lee will be right back to your question.
Price Financial Group, wealth management.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Coulson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplify, and we'll go right to the phones. Lee, you have a question regarding 1035 exchange of life insurance policies.
Yes, I have a life insurance policy I've had for probably 50 years. It's done very well in the stock market, but I don't need it anymore as life insurance, and I'm paying insurance fees on it. I did some checking around, and I was told the only thing I could do was a 1035 rollover, and only with one company that has the only license to do that. Taking out the cash value is not a good option for me in terms of taxes and Medicare.
Well, if you were to cash it out, what is your capital? What is your taxable event if you were to cash it out?
Oh, $50,000-$60,000.
Okay, so you have a substantial amount of money in this life insurance.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, well, There are you can always borrow the cash value out, which is a tax-free event.
Mm-hmm.
And if you die, it's paid off at your death, and then the other proceeds go to your heirs. Have you had the company run an in-service illustration for you, showing you if you were to take maximum loan values out of the policy?
No.
Okay, I would ask, generally speaking, with somebody in your situation where you've had this policy for a long time, is it a variable life or a straight life?
I haven't paid attention to the terminology.
Okay.
But I say it's been playing the stock market and
okay,
doing
then
really
if it's in the market, then it's a variable life.
Okay,
that's you've answered the question right there. Okay. And it's done very well for you, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. You can structure the. Okay. What is your tax bracket?
22-25, somewhere in there.
Okay. Kevin, we just did a show on this about, you mentioned Medicare, so I'm assuming you're over 65.
Right. And if I take that whole cash value, then my income for the year is over $85,000, and I have to pay more for my Medicare.
Okay. Well, Let me explain something to you, because I don't think people are telling you the right scoop. You don't have to take it out all at once. You can take it out over the next 3 or 4 years.
Ah, okay.
So forget the 1035 exchange. What you're going to do is, and if you want, I'll do this for free for you. You just come by my office, and I'll sit down, and I'll show you on your contract. You can take money out of it over the next 4 years. So if you were going to have $50,000 of taxable income, you're going to have $12,500 a year.
Okay.
And you just draw it out over the time, and we'll just take it out over 4 years, and that's not going to affect your Medicare.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a very simple thing to do, and if you don't need the life insurance, it makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep, just give me a call, and I'll be glad to help you with it.
Will do.
You bet. Thanks, Lee. Bye-bye. Good question. Very good question. Kevin, now we're going to talk about taxes. And
sounds
that's
good.
Certainly, you know, this is one of the things you and I discussed a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
is so many seniors get tied up into investments, and then all of a sudden they get hit with these large amounts of money, and it pushes them into a higher cost on Medicare.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, it sure does. I wanted to make one comment regarding our prior caller. You had asked what age he was over 59 and a half to do the regular to Roth IRA conversion. And just a little further information on that. Fortunately, when you're doing a regular to Roth conversion, the 10% penalty does not kick in if you're under 59 and a half because you're still in an IRA. So that's a good thing. There is a 10% penalty, though, if when you make that conversion, you don't hold it for 5 years in the Roth. If you take it out before that 5 years, then there is a 10% penalty on the amount that you take out. So there's a certain set of rules on that 10% penalty, and it's definitely an involved situation. So I thought I would talk a little bit on the tax investigator. This is a... I didn't know this was on the national level, but before we do this, looks like we have another caller. Joseph, are you there? You have a call regarding debt in a living trust. This sounds like a question for Carl.
Yes, sir. So my question is, I work for a car dealership, and every once in a while, we'll have clients come through, and they'll want to put the vehicle that they're purchasing in their living trust, which makes sense. But every once in a while, one will ask to assume debt in that living trust, and I've been told and never really gotten clarification of whether that's possible or not.
Well, I'm not sure that I you mean assume the debt by the living trust? In other words,
yeah,
the living trust becomes obligated on an underlying loan?
Yes, sir, that's exactly right.
Number one, I wouldn't do that. I can't imagine the lender doing that, frankly. Generally speaking, because as a practical matter, the living trust doesn't provide any kind of creditor insulation. So the assets in the living trust are vulnerable to the trustor's to their creditors. So even if you transfer the and usually what happens is they transfer a title to it into the trust after they've already purchased it and financed it, and they're paying on it, and they just go down to the DMV and change the title, but the lien holder is going to remain the same, and so that's not going to get them out of paying the trust. Quite frankly, we don't usually transfer vehicles into the living trust because people change them quite often, and also because
right. The
DMV has a pretty easy process to transfer title when somebody dies, so long as you have some documentation. And, you know, usually you have to have a death certificate and some evidence that you're the person that should get the title. And then, you know, people go down and they pay $100 and they transfer the title. So
I think that reaffirms what I thought. So thank you very much.
You bet. Bye. Mm-hmm.
All
thank
right.
you.
Very okay, good. Back to the tax investigator.
Yes, good question.
Good question, yeah.
So recently we heard on the national level that the Trump administration was looking at indexing capital gains for inflation. And that's kind of an interesting topic. It's definitely a hot topic. People have got... opinions one way or the other on that. But I thought I would just briefly discuss what that is. I don't think it's going to gain traction to go through, you know, but it may. But in general, what that is, say, for example, I think this is the best way to, this is one scenario. Say you buy a house in the 80s. It's a spanking brand new 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom ranch house in the 80s. You paid $100,000 for it. And now, okay, well, we'll make it the 70s, $100,000. And now, almost, 40 years later, the house has deteriorated. It's gone down. You still have a $100,000 basis, but now it's, quote, worth $300,000. And you go to sell this house. We won't say that there's any principal residence exclusion. We'll say it was an investment property, and you go to sell this house, you're paying tax on $200,000 worth of gain, but the asset is in worse shape than when you bought it. And you've got, you know, your position has actually deteriorated, according to the asset's depreciation, but now you have a $200,000, tax liability on this. So that's the inflation that's in there. And I think that aspect of indexing capital gains for inflation would be a good thing. Where all the pushback comes is most wealthy individuals, the 1%ers, the even 5%ers or the 10%ers, capital gains is a benefit to them. And so people view this as a break to the rich. But you know, you could put an income limitation or something on this so that the average Joe could benefit.
Here's the thing, Kevin. We always hear this about the rich, the rich. Well, what income level is the rich? What asset level is the rich?
Right.
The thing is, I see this as a great benefit for a lot of seniors who have bought stock at an early age, bought it for years and years, let it accumulate, and now they have some stock that's maybe worth $300,000-$400,000 more than they paid for it. But actually, with inflation, that stock isn't really that much more valuable, and so they're going to get hit paying capital gains on $300,000. Mm-hmm. When in reality, if you take away the inflation, they maybe have a $100,000 gain,
right?
You know, and so for seniors, I think if the government, when they try to do this indexing, I think if they put an age limit on it, like 65, I think it'd go right through, because there isn't a senior out there that doesn't look at their assets and say, you know what, if I sell this asset, I got to pay all this capital gain, but if I wait till I die, it gets a stepped up basis, and I'll just pass it to my kids.
Yep. Yeah.
And I don't know. I think there's got to be a way that particularly most of my clients who are retirement age are paying more in property tax than they paid for mortgage payments. Now, folks, listen closely to this. Most people that are in their 60s and 70s are paying more in property tax than they paid in their mortgage payment. And that's a problem in America, because unfortunately a lot of people didn't plan for retirement, so they're having to buy their house. You know, anybody who buys a 30-year mortgage, you normally know you're going to pay three times what you're buying, right? Because of the interest rate,
right?
You're going to pay, you know, if you bought the house for $300,000, you're going to be paying $900,000 out in payments, mortgage payments. Well, now you get to turn around and do that again for the rest of your life with property tax. So do you ever really own the property?
Yeah.
You have a partner. Yeah. Yeah. So I think there needs to be some income tax, and there needs to be some capital gain tax for seniors who have lived a long time, paid taxes for 40, 50 years in this country. They ought to get a benefit instead of somebody walking across the border getting pay for, and not putting a dime into America. There's just something wrong with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the U.S. is one of the and possibly the only country who taxes inflation. So it's not an acceptable method in other parts of the world for a number of reasons. So it seems like the idea has some merit if appropriately structured, you know, so that it works with all the other wheels that move in our government. Well, moving on, I guess we should probably go to our next break, and then I'll come back with another little topic at some later point.
Okay, we'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management. Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
Hello, my name is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and co-host of the long-running radio talk show, Investing Simplified. My law practice emphasizes estate planning and probate. My mission statement is practical estate planning for peace of mind. This means that I listen carefully to my clients. I explain the various estate planning techniques and documents in the most understandable terms that I can. I try to make sure that my clients are comfortable with what we are doing together before proceeding, and I discuss my fees up front so that clients don't get any unwanted surprise. Estate planning and probate don't have to be that complicated. My experienced staff and I work closely with our clients to guide them through both of these matters in the simplest and most efficient manner possible. My office is located in the White Office Building at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, right across the street from Mall 205. My telephone number is 971-229-0585, and my website is carljepsonlaw.com.
Investments, tax questions, or legal concerns? Get them all answered now for free. Call Chuck, Kevin, or Carl for your answers. Call 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the Knowledge Trust.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, and we'll go right to the lines. We have a call from Dennis. Dennis, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. And your question?
My question is, I work, I'm a volunteer for Habitat for Humanity, and we talk to a lot of people all day long, and especially senior citizens, in regards to donations. And does it really make any difference, especially for a senior citizen, to donate things to stores like us or Goodwill? Do they actually get anything back as far as taxes go?
You know, that's a great question. For the most part, on your federal return, the new standard deduction is it's $24,000, and if you're a senior citizen, it's going to be an extra $1,300 per person. So you could be pushing $26,600 as a standard deduction. And so unless all your other itemized deductions exceed $26,000, you're not going to get much of a benefit from that. Now, on your Oregon tax return, you would, because their standard deduction is really low, and most people will still itemize for Oregon. But that's just 9% of the value.
I'm north of the river, and I'm happy up here. But I talked to a lot of people, and some say yes, and some say no. And the last few years, I know I have not gotten anything back as far as donations. And another one, a person was talking about a neighbor of mine donating a car, and she is also a senior citizen. And does donating a car make any difference?
It's going to be the exact same set of rules.
It just depends on the value of the car.
Yeah.
Well, we're not talking about $400 or $500.
No, makes no difference.
Yeah.
The only thing is, you get a good feeling helping two good organizations.
Well, that's true. I talked to a lot of people who are all happy about being our donations, but like I say, as far as getting anything back from the government, I guess we can just sort of forget about it and kiss that off. Is that correct?
Very good.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate the help, and it's nice talking to you guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. We've got another caller on the line. It looks like David's got a question about details to bring to a estate planner.
Yes. What type of information does one need to gather to come? If I were going to come talk to you, Carl, about a will or a living trust, what type of? I know you're psychic. You want the cobra.
Yeah, Bree, just bring that as a...
Well, he's got your number, Carl. He's got you. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I got to get a new gift, I guess, to work through. But anyway, information, that's a great question, and it's one that really saves a lot of time and effort sometimes. One of the things that we usually do is if you call and make an appointment to come in, what I do is I send you out a questionnaire that asks you to fill out stuff and asks you to provide us with certain information written down, you know, and that's usually the people part, who are your children and that sort of thing. And it also asks about assets. But one of the things I like to ask for, in addition to, you know, just a listing of the assets, is a copy of one statement from each of your financial assets, so that I can, you know, IRAs and 401ks and, you know, stocks portfolios and things like that. I don't need a bunch of them. I just need to see basically what they are, so that I can get a sense of what kind of assets they are, because we things like IRAs and 401ks typically are treated quite differently than, you know, than just a standard, you know, ownership of a stock portfolio. So we just like to look to make sure that we're treating them in the right kind of way. But other than that, if you have real estate in some other place other than Portland or the local area, it's good to have maybe a copy of the deed if you have that. But generally around town, if your real estate is here, I can get that from the title company, which I usually do. So after that, I would say think through the information I really want to know when you come in, though, is who do you want to get the property and what happens if they aren't around to get it? In other words, who are your alternative beneficiaries? Those things a lot of times people just don't think about, and for obvious reasons. They don't want to think about their children dying before they do, and I don't want to think that either. But nonetheless, that's one of the things we kind of try to like to look for. And then also, if you have anybody that needs to be have their inheritance made to go over time rather than go directly to them at the immediate death, those things can be big concerns, and we'll talk about them when you come in. But nonetheless, I think that's basically it. Your financial picture from the standpoint of statements and or real estate, either based on address, real estate description, or the deed. So,
thank you very much.
That do it. I mean, I think that's about it, really. You know what? And like I said, ask for the questionnaire. We'll send that out to you, and then you can fill that out, and it asks you, you know, who you want to be your personal representative, who you want to be your trustee. Trustees are difficult sometimes because, you know, a lot of times the people are looking for a trustee, and all of their friends or relatives that they really want may be, you know, as old as they are, and they're concerned about them outliving them. And so it's really important to think about those things as we work through the process.
Very good. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for the call. We've got another caller on the line. Jeannie's got a question. Text question. Jeannie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Okay. I had a very strange thing happen that I sent my taxes in this year, and then I got an extra $200, or I wasn't to get any refund. I had to pay some. And the letter said I get a $200 refund, just under $200. And I received the check, and I received the letter of explanation. And I called IRS, and they were not able to tell me anything that wasn't on the explanation letter. And also said that there was no one there to explain or to help until next tax season. And I thought that was rather strange. So I'm wondering if that's correct. And then I can go into the problem, which I don't see as a problem.
Yeah, I would think they would have somebody there to be able to discuss your situation further.
I would think so, too. I just couldn't believe that. But that's what they told me. Okay, now what the problem was on my Schedule F for farming. My farming is a very small, straight deal.
Mm-hmm.
I raise hay. I sell hay. It costs me such and such dollars to harvest the hay. And I made out my Schedule F to that extent, which I've done for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And in going to the instructions, I see that there's all kinds of things as subsidies and losses.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't fit me. Mine is very simple. I make such and such dollars for the hay, and it costs me such and such,
mm-hmm.
which I am, and I have every year, able to claim a portion of my property taxes, and which usually puts me into a loss, naturally, because I don't have that much hay. So anyway, I was just wondering what on earth I could have done wrong, because there's no explanation of what I've done wrong. It just said it was Schedule F.
Interesting. I would have to take a look at that notice to see what they were talking about. They typically...
Well, I have it here.
And do they have a brief description of what the adjustment was? Was it on income or a denied deduction? Or, no, I'm sorry, an increased deduction?
I don't think the letter says that, but on some of the correspondence, it changed my income. It changed Social Security a little bit because I was having to pay a little bit on Social Security.
Okay.
And it was just adjustments in maybe two or three different ways.
Gotcha. Well, I would recommend dropping that off at our office, and I will take a look at it. Sometimes for something under $200, sometimes it's just nice to deposit the check and not spend any more time worrying about it. If the IRS isn't going to give you a better description and the check is good, then, you know, there's other things in life to worry about than something.
Yeah, $200 blessing is not all bad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
True. That's very true. But I would like to know what I did wrong for the future. And then if I truly did something wrong, I can amend it for 3 years back.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, I can't help you much without taking a look at that. And once I do, I can help you. So you could definitely drop that by our office and or email it to me, and I would get back to you on that.
Okay. What is that address?
Email address is...
David Newberg.
Okay. Email is... kstege, K-S-T-E-E-G-E, at baker-colson.com.
Baker-colson, C-O-L-S-O-N?
That's it.
.com. And could you do Stege again?
K-S-T-E-E-G-E.
Okay, that's what I had.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Very good.
Great. Thanks a lot, Jeannie. We've got other callers here holding. We got to get to. So thank you very much. We appreciate your call. Next caller on the line we got is Karen, has a question about taking a tax deduction.
Hello.
Hi, Karen.
Hi there. I was just wondering what is the definition of a tax credit and a tax deduction, and which one is more beneficial?
Ah, very good. This gets my heart beating faster talking about credits
yeah.
and deductions.
All these numbers, right?
Exactly. Yeah. A credit is very good because it's a dollar for dollar reduction of your tax liability, what you actually are paying. A deduction is a deduction against your income for which your tax rate applies. So if you're in the 22% tax bracket, you know, a $100 deduction will save you $22 in taxes, but a $100 credit will save you $100 in taxes. So
how does one go about getting tax credits?
Oh,
my yeah,
goodness.
Absolutely. All those you can get.
Exactly. Yeah. They're for many different things. They have them for having kids, for contributing to retirement plans, to investing in certain things. There's many credits.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just investigate it further then. Thank you so much.
Great, Karen. Thanks.
Thank you.
Listen, I'm going to get to something real quick. You're kind of running out of time here. We got about 11 minutes to go for the show. And so we're going to take one more quick break. Now, I'm going to come back with a tease for the next show. So we'll be right back with Investing Simplified Radio.
Price
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
Investments, tax questions, or legal concerns? Get them all answered now for free. Call Chuck, Kevin, or Carl for your answers. Call 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the Knowledge Trust.
Well, today, because of time and we've ran long, we've done a lot of talking about estates and trusts. We talked about taxes. Now, I'm going to talk about something that I'm going to fire across the bow of a lot of people out there. So I want you to understand, I've got the numbers to back up what I'm going to tell you. But all I hear on the radio from a lot of radio shows is the safe money guy, the income guy, the... You know, listen, I'm gonna tell you a fact. There is nothing over time that outproduces the stock market. Nothing. I mean, so people can talk about, yeah, you can have safety in annuities. Some annuities are safe. Some are not so safe. Some are reasonable. Some are not so reasonable. I mean, there's even a guy on TV who says he'd rather go to hell and die than ever sell an annuity. And that they're all bad. Well, I got news for you. They're not all bad. There's a lot of bad ones, but they're not all bad. That's like saying, because you're upset with your bank, that all banks are bad. All credit unions are bad. You know what, folks? Nothing of any one segment is all bad. That is a real biased opinion, and one that says that there's a lack of education and training in the area that you're saying is all bad. For one thing, any annuity product that's brought out in the state of Washington or Oregon has to be approved by the state insurance department. So why don't you go tell them they're doing nothing but bad stuff? I don't think they would like that very much, because they're trying to do the best they can for the consumers of the state. So here's the thing. Consumer, you need to be aware of what's going on in the industry and what's going on in the marketplace. And I'm going to give you an example here, because there are some good annuities and there are some bad annuities. And I'm going to give you an actual case of a client that has about $360,000 in an annuity. They listened to one of these programs. They went out, put $360,000 in an annuity, so they'd have a $20,000, that's 5.55% guaranteed, off their money for the rest of their life. Sounds good, right? Sounds good. But what if you really want to analyze this thing and take a look at it, in this example, the client's taking out $20,000 a year, plus the internal cost of the annuity is right at about 3.75%. That's the internal cost. So this client that's taken out 5.55, plus the 3.75, is actually taking out 9.3% of their contract a year. So to make any money, that investment has to make 9.3% per year to grow. Not going to happen. Not going to happen. We were able, by going in and looking at better products, newer annuity products, we were able to increase this person's income by about $1,500 a year for the rest of their life. But more importantly of all, we reduced their expenses by almost $8,000 a year. A year. Over 20 years. If they live 20, now they're 70, if they live to 90, that's $160,000 that goes to the client instead of the insurance company. Now, folks, that's a lot of money. So what I say to you is, if you're buying an annuity, or if you bought an annuity in the last 4 or 5 years that has an income rider, and you're paying for that income rider, I think you might want to give me a call and let me do an analysis for you and show you what the cost of that is. And let me give you a real simple analogy. Let's say you have an annuity that has an income rider that guarantees you 6% for the rest of your life income. And that annuity rider is costing 1.95% per year. Over 20 years. Let's say you got $100,000 in that annuity. So it's right at about $1,950 a year, right? 1.95%, Kevin? That's right. So if you take that over 20 years, how much money is that?
You're asking me?
It's a little under $40,000. Folks, that's 40% of your principal. I mean, think about it. Look, if you're not asking the key questions, first of all, if the guy you're sitting down with, sitting across the table from you, if all he can sell you is insurance annuities and he's not licensed for investments, what kind of fiduciary accountability does he really have? His fiduciary accountability is he's only licensed to sell annuities, so he can only talk to you about insurance products. He can't really legally talk to you about investments in the stock market because he's not licensed for securities. Now, if he's not, I think the question would be is, why not? He might not be able to. I don't know. But I hear people all the time. I see people come in and bring stuff to me, and I check out who they bought it from, and I'm looking at the person's track record, and I'm saying, did you even ask this person to see their broker check? Did you ask them to print out their broker check? Now, I could tell you there's guys who have broker check right on the front page of their website because they know for a fact you're not going to check it out. Psychologically, you're not going to check it out. You see it there, you say, oh, it's got to be fine. Well, ask for a copy. Ask for a copy. If you don't ask for a copy, it's your fault. Not the agent's fault. It's your fault. You need to be asking for that. You need to ask if they've ever had a complaint with the state insurance department. You need to ask. You need to ask those questions. The thing is, if the guy sitting there talking to you about your investment portfolio is not licensed to discuss investments, then they're talking about insurance products, not investments. And there is a difference. There is a big, big difference. It's always amazing to me as I hear these guys bank on yourself, and they talk about the Russian roulette of the stock market. Well, isn't it interesting? The same thing they invest in is the stock market. The one that they advertise about getting you out of, the Russian roulette of the stock market, but yet they're going to take your money and put it in the stock market. Yeah, there's different ways to put money in the market, and there's different ways to invest money. All I'm saying is, buyer beware. What's that famous saying, Carl?
Caveat emptor.
There you go. Yep, buyer beware. If you're looking at investments, you need to check them out. Carl, how's somebody get a hold of you?
Telephone number is 971-229-0585, and I'm at carljeffsonlaw.com.
Kevin?
We are at 503-666-5569, and our website is baker-colson.com.
And you can reach me at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, or better yet, go on the web at pfgwm.com and check out our website. And I've got to say to you, if you have an annuity that has an income rider, and it doesn't hurt to get a second opinion, I would recommend that you give my office a call, set up a meeting with me, and let me review your annuity for you. Because I will show you exactly, I did this week. One client, we looked at her annuity. It was absolutely the best thing she could have done. And I told her that. I said, you know what? You've had this for 10 years. It's got a guaranteed rider on it. You're paying a very low fee. This is a very, very good product. We're going to talk about this next Saturday. We'll see you then. Thank you very much for listening to Investing Simplified.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management.
Navigating through today's financial investment world can seem pretty scary. Now, here's the good news. Chuck Price, president of Price Financial Group Wealth Management, introduces a new revolutionary concept that will change how you invest now and in the future. It's called Asset Lock. Asset Lock monitors your investment accounts 24/7, 365 and alerts you when action needs to be taken. And now, Chuck Price offers Asset Lock. At Price Financial Group Wealth Management, we believe all our clients deserve to have Asset Lock monitoring their accounts. So call Chuck today or online at pfgwm.com and learn how you can get Asset Lock on your accounts today for free. Price Financial Group Wealth Management, because the smart investor knows what you don't know can hurt you.
Investing Simplified.
Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000.